Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Lauren Meltzer. Our topic for this hour is smoother sailing for the America's Cup. Last week, after about a year of negotiations, the Board of Supervisors voted unanimously to approve a revised deal to bring America's Cup to San Francisco in the fall of 2013. The agreement finalizes the venues for the 34th America's Cup and calls for millions of dollars in pier and waterfront improvements in San Francisco. It is expected to draw more than 1 million spectators. What was behind the unanimous vote? What will the race offer the city at this point? And what concerns are still on the table? Joining me in studio to talk about these issues and more are Josh Arce, the Executive Director of Brightline Defense, a San Francisco public policy nonprofit that works to promote opportunities for disadvantaged communities, focusing particularly on jobs and the environment. And Brightline and a coalition of community advocates and labor unions worked with Supervisor John Avalos to develop and win San Francisco's landmark local hiring law that recently celebrated its one-year anniversary and will apply to construction associated with the upcoming America's Cup. Welcome, Josh.
Thank you.
We also have in studio Kimball Livingston, who's editor-at-large for Sail Magazine and a blogger at blueplanettimes.com, and he's been covering the America's Cup since 1980. Welcome, Kimball.
It's good to be here.
And we also have Stephanie Lee in studio. She's a reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. She covers land use in San Francisco and America's Cup. Welcome, Stephanie.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
And by phone later in the hour, we expect to be able to talk to Supervisors John Avalos and Jane Kim. So we look forward to their joining our show in a little bit. And we invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation by dialing 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So I'd like to start tonight with Stephanie Lee. You're a reporter for San Francisco Chronicle, and you've been covering the events leading up to this revised deal. Can you summarize the controversial events that happened pre-deal and what made this new deal more acceptable to the supervisors?
Sure. So the city and the America's Cup agreed that San Francisco would host the event back in December 2010. And since then, they've been engaged in a sort of mad dash to the finish to get it underway. The first part of that, the controversial part of that, was the environmental impact report, which is a state-required environmental analysis of the event and how it would impact its surroundings in San Francisco. So when that was released by the city's planning commission, a lot of neighborhood and environmental groups took issue with it. They said that it did not fairly assess its impacts on things like traffic and the environment. So the analysis was revised a little bit, and the biggest concession that city planners made in getting it ultimately passed by the Board of Supervisors was the Jumbotron, which was going to float in Aquatic Park and sort of show the race on a big screen. So they took that out, and then only then was the environmental impact report able to be approved. And the second part of the controversy came when the development deal came up between the Event Authority, which is the race's business arm, and the city. And the heart of that deal was it involved Piers 3032, which was going to house the sort of like team boats. They were going to set up shop there while the races went on. You could walk through and check out what the teams are doing. And then Seawall Lot 350, which was across from the Embarcadero. So what some supervisors expressed concern about was that they were worried that giving the Event Authority would get long-term development rights, basically, to those two parts of port property, and they would have it for up to 66 years, and then in exchange, they would invest, like, $111 million worth of infrastructure and dredging and other pier improvements. And the city has been seeking for decades to get these fixed. Piers 3032, for example, are currently so dilapidated that they can't support heavy trucks. So the city's been looking for a long time to get this fixed. And then when the America's Cup came in with this offer, at first it seemed like, oh, this is what we've been looking for. But then some supervisors started expressing concerns, saying, well, we're not comfortable with, you know, this company essentially having rights to what is some of the most prime, you know, waterfront real estate in the world. What ultimately happened was that the deal got scaled back so that Pier 32 will be fixed, but not to the extent that the port was initially hoping to. What's happening now is that Pier 32 will be fixed just enough so it can support a minor amount of crowds, and just the, you know, the very worst parts of it will be fixed. And we'll extend the lifespan of them for about 30 years. After that, city officials aren't really sure what will happen next. But, you know, for 30 years, which includes the America's Cup, you know, they'll be able to support some people. But the event has gone through a lot of scaling back since it was initially conceived.
And so what happens with the leasing element of it? Who will be paying for this? And
initially the event authority was going to be fronting up to $111 million. Now it's sort of reversed so that the Port of San Francisco will be paying up to $22 million of its own money to basically fix mostly Pier 32, but other improvements along the waterfront for the races.
So will the taxpayers have to chip in too?
They say no. They say that it'll be because the port will retain rights to the piers, and they initially anticipated that they weren't going to be able to. They say now that rent from tenants on that property will now come back to the port, and that'll be the main source of revenue to pay for those improvements.
Okay, and Larry Ellison had a big role in all this. What was his role? I mean, how has his role changed with this revised deal? Is that at all in terms of, you know, his the access that he'll have to the, he, I mean, he was part of kicking this all off, right?
He was instrumental in kicking it all off. I'm not sure that his role has changed all that much. And he's still, you know, the big force behind Oracle Racing, which is going to be the main, you know, our competing team in the America's Cup. Some say he should chip in more to help, you know, pay for the infrastructure costs, but he hadn't seemed to express a great deal of excitement about that.
And so the supervisors, it was unanimous. I mean, was that a surprise?
It's unanimous, but it took a long time to get there. I mean, those who put up the most amount or expressed the most, you know, concern would be like Supervisor David Chu, John Avalos, who I understand will call in later, Jane Kim, whose district overlaps with Pier 32, David Campos. They were all concerned about what a long-term development deal would mean for the city, you know, once the boats clear out at the end of next year.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, interesting. So Kimball, why don't I bring you into this conversation? And you know, for those who aren't familiar with what the America's Cup really is, what, I mean, how would you, using, you know, visual images, how would you describe this?
Let me take it off in a slightly different direction if I could.
Oh, sure. Okay.
I think a lot of people have seen some pictures on TV and the newspapers, and that sort of gets the idea planted. But the America's Cup is something very different from what most people imagine.
In terms of a race.
Let me do a history point first, and then we'll come right back to the present.
Fantastic.
The America's Cup is part of our national heritage. In 1851, Britain ruled an empire because Britannia ruled the waves. And some upstart Yanks took a boat to Britain and raced before the eyes of the world and beat the British. It was huge in this country. There had been editorials saying, don't go, you'll embarrass the whole country. But they went. They beat the best the British had. The America's Cup was won by a boat named America. It electrified this country. I repeat, the America's Cup is part of our national heritage. Now, jump to the present. If you live in the Bay Area by virtue of living here, you're part of the biggest gamble ever undertaken in any sport. No one has ever taken a sport, much less the premier international event in the sport, and tried to do something as radical as is happening right here. It's not just the new boats. It's not just a new type of sailor. New types of courses adapted for television rather than the traditional types of courses that people have been sailing on for decades, in which the diehard traditionalists believe should still be the case. The event authority was just mentioned. There was never an event authority before. Only a yacht club can win the America's Cup. There's a line in a 19th century document that governs the America's Cup. It's a trust deed created in the state of New York. And it says that any club, any foreign club, having its annual regatta on the sea or an arm of the sea shall always be entitled to a match. But this quaint 19th century document has worked a lot of mischief because the America's Cup has grown into this huge international multi-million, even billion-dollar event that simply doesn't work. So the America's Cup now is an attempt to put some structure around that, maybe achieve a future in which the America's Cup doesn't get dragged back into court again, because it was only a couple of years ago. We spent 2 years in court bickering about arcane matters, truly arcane matters.
So like
Larry Ellison's Oracle Racing won the cup in February 2010. And prior to that, ever since the last match in Valencia, Spain in 2007 had ended, there had been one court battle after another.
Okay.
And we don't have time on the air for me to take you through that story, but from my sailor's perspective, Larry Ellison was a hero. He rescued the cup from a fellow who was trying to set himself up as the emperor of America's Cup yachting. The rules that he was trying to institute would have allowed him to dismiss any other player at any time. It was insane. And there were no other takers for the role of trying to beat this guy and get the America's Cup away. To me, it was a rescue.
Okay. Well, Kimball, the boats that they use are different than a lot of time the boats you see out on the bay. A lot of times you see kind of larger 40-foot boats that carry several people. These are one-man boats, correct?
Oh, no. They have a crew of five in their current iteration. But these boats that you will be seeing sailing this year, actually, there's a thing called the America's Cup World Series.
Okay.
It's not the America's Cup. But one of the things that's going on here is an attempt to leverage the America's Cup brand to create the international professional series that the sport has needed for a long, long time. In order to get that going, because we've had a long hiatus, in order to get that going, they created a new type of boat, a catamaran, 45 feet long, and started building them as fast as they could in New Zealand. And each team that wants to play buys one or two or as many as they want. And they can enter them in these World Series events. They have teams of five. They are incredibly athletic. There is no other form of athletic endeavor that is harder than what these guys are doing on these 45-foot catamarans, which, by the way, are powered by rigid wings, not soft sails like the conventional things. 40% more powerful than a conventional sail. And fast.
And each year they each country creates their own boat, correct?
This will be the next phase. Remember I said that in order to get something going, they created this fleet of identical boats and sold them out to the teams. Now, that's not the America's Cup. That's the international circuit, the America's Cup World Series, as they call it. In 2013, we'll have the actual America's Cup sailed on the San Francisco City front. Those boats will be 72 feet long.
72 feet long.
Much blown up from what we're seeing now. All these boats, in almost no wind at all, they'll go fast enough to pull a water skier.
Well, and so, how many of them will we see on the water?
Impossible to say now because the entries haven't closed.
Okay.
The total number is going to be down from what was originally touted when they first won the cup. The economic climate just isn't making it easy for teams to find money, partners, sponsors. Right now, we know that Oracle Racing will build two boats. They are the defenders. They get to race no matter what. The America's Cup is a two-boat race. They'll have the Louis Vuitton Cup Challenger Eliminations beginning in July and continuing to the beginning of September in 2013. Those boats will be each custom-built, 72 feet long, with 130-foot tall wings.
Uh-huh.
And right now, we have four of those being built. Sweden, New Zealand, Italy, and Spain.
Okay, I love this. I mean, you're really giving us a from the sailor's perspective. This is, you know, I think there's the business side of this and the city side and the from the water side. So this is really great.
I can't wait to get it out of the business pages, no offense, Stephanie, and onto the sports pages.
Well, let me bring in Josh. Josh, you work at Brightline, particularly around the San Francisco local hiring law. Can you tell us how this plays into the America's Cup discussions?
Yeah, and I think, you know, that it, for me, I do community work. And I don't know about the boats. Learning a lot tonight. I think that that's what I think is going to happen. If I was to maybe reframe what has been said by Stephanie and Kimball, I think is really a symbol of what's happened with the America's Cup within the past couple weeks. I think that for the past year and change, the America's Cup has been both a race and a development deal. But I think that now what's been approved is more a race, less development deal. And I think for the work that we do, that's critical, because when the host and venue agreement was approved that Stephanie mentioned by the Board of Supervisors late 2010, we were working with other community members, advocates from communities such as Bayview Hunters Point, Chinatown, the Mission, South the Market, communities where whenever there's a proposed economic development or an event like America's Cup, there's always promises of all kinds of economic benefits that are really part of what attracts certain types of investments, I suppose. And they're really, particularly in this economic climate, broadcast in terms of jobs. So we coincidentally were working with Supervisor Avalos at that time to develop a law that would take any time a America's Cup or any kind of international similar type of event, or even businesses doing business with San Francisco, when we talked about all these different benefits that were proposed, that we'd make good on them, that we'd have guarantees of opportunities and not predicate these ideas on good faith or trickle-down economics. So a lot of us heard, well, the America's Cup is coming, and we didn't know about the boats, but we said, hey, that's a world sailing boat extravaganza that's gonna be a lot of at least interesting things happen. And then when the jobs were touted, we spent the past year trying to make good on these jobs commitments, because it is going to create a lot of jobs.
So the jobs that come will be temporary, correct? Or is temporary meaning like literally for a year, or is there are there jobs that will, because of the changes, will last more than just a year getting things up and running?
It's definitely going to be less jobs, and it is still going to be temporary jobs, particularly with the work that's going to be done on the waterfront and the work that's going to be created during the time that the exciting races are happening. I think that in this economic climate, every job is important. I think particularly for the groups that we work with, we have a really strong relationship as community members with organized labor, and we work to promote an agenda around local hiring opportunities for San Franciscans, particularly disadvantaged residents. And also we want to make sure that when we build and when we do these type of job creation events like America's Cup, that these are good paying union jobs. And so I think at the end of the day, we had a series of hearings around, well, what are the commitments going to be? It was one of the concerns that Stephanie mentioned, along with the financing, what kind of jobs and jobs for whom. We got a commitment that America's Cup is going to comply with the city's local hiring law, which in the past year that it's been on the books has increased opportunities for San Franciscans by 70%.
Wow.
It's pretty incredible, and that Supervisor Avalos is our champion on that. So that part is exciting. I think it's going to be less work, as Stephanie said, work that the city's tried to get done on our waterfront over there at Piers 30 and 32. We're going to need more work to be done, but at least it's a start of going. And I think it's more to the point, perhaps, of the discussion tonight. It's making, I think, an event that's hopefully going to be more inclusive, because if you are hiring local residents to do this work, albeit temporary, if they're out there both doing the construction that's going to happen, the permanent work on the docks, and as well as the temporary construction where we've secured a prevailing wage commitment to provide good paying jobs when you build bleachers or this thing that's called the America's Cup Village, still waiting to see what that looks like. I suppose it's a big tent, but that's, if it's a tent for 500,000 people, that's a pretty big tent. It's going to be a lot of jobs, good paying jobs now, I think, thanks to a lot of the voices that came together, Supervisor Kim, Supervisor Avalos, and a lot of the supervisors.
When they say local jobs, can people from the East Bay or Peninsula apply, or is it really just San Francisco?
The way that the city's law works is it says that if San Franciscans are making an investment on building a bridge, or in this case through the Port Commission, making an investment in the piers at Pier 30 and 32 to reshore them and stabilize them, there's a minimum threshold. In the past, the city required on taxpayer-funded projects to have contractors exhibit an exercise of good faith to hire local residents, and that really meant no opportunities, very little. The year before this new law passed, which makes it a guarantee, a requirement rather, to do business with the city had about a 20% local workforce when they were paying for something. Last year that went up to 34%. So to your question, there's nearly two-thirds of the work available on any time, even when San Francisco taxpayers are paying for something. Two-thirds of that work is our partners, our brothers and sisters in cities like Oakland. We have an agreement with San Mateo County to trade opportunities. And I think the fact that the local hire law is now in place for America's Cup, like I say, we went out there after months of raising a lot of serious questions with a lot of different groups from around the Bay Area. We're happy to see that it is more inclusive at this point.
That's great. If you're just tuning in, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KLW in San Francisco. Tonight we're discussing San Francisco's decision to host America's Cup. My guests are Josh Arce, the Executive Director of Brightline Defense, which helped develop the city's local hiring law, Stephanie Lee, the reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, who covers land use in San Francisco and the America's Cup, and Kimball Livingston, a sailor, author, and blogger, who's covered America's Cup for more than 30 years. And we invite you to call in with your questions or comments. Is having America's Cup in San Francisco a good or bad idea as far as you're concerned? We'd like to hear from you. The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. So, this isn't the first time that San Francisco has hosted a big event. I'm curious, I don't know, maybe Stephanie, if I don't know if you know, or Kimball, how this is impacts the economy. Is it a real spike and then goes down, or how does hosting an event impact a city?
Yeah, well, the America's Cup is projected to bring in, according to estimates from the city, about $1 billion, and that's from various sources of revenue. That's from just general tourists coming to the city, thousands of people coming to watch the boats, and then what they'll spend in terms of hotels and sightseeing unrelated to the event. So $1 billion is the projection.
Okay. And is it typical, I don't know, Josh, for a city when it has like this, do people tend to move to the city for work because there's a lot of jobs and then leave again? Or do people generally people that live here staying here on a permanent basis just now have more employment opportunities?
The way something like this would work when it's under the kind of framework that we've been able to secure, which is community and partnership with labor. You work with labor unions will help you, particularly the laborers union, carpenters, operating engineers that do cranes. What they'll do is help folks to get out to work. And then though the work might be temporary, there's no need to move and shift when you become a skilled worker. You're said to be journey level, the route, if we're going to go back on history for a kind of jobs piece, you journey to the work. So there's no need to move necessarily. It's just kind of the nature of it. When you work with labor in that capacity, you can get folks on and off and still continue a career doing the work.
And have there, I mean, is there any anticipation that if this is successful, that there will be other races of this caliber here in San Francisco? And Kimball, do you know?
Well, if Larry Ellison and his Oracle Racing team win in 2013, the America's Cup stays here for another cycle.
Okay.
If Artemis wins, it doesn't necessarily leave. And beyond that, if only we had taken more advantage of the opportunity to revamp the waterfront, more could come to the city. There is an ocean race just arriving now. You heard about the injuries at sea. That race comes all the way from China, and they would have loved to have stopped in San Francisco, but there was no place for them, so they're putting up in Oakland.
So as far as you're concerned, this the work that they're doing this pier sounds like a fantastic idea, like long, you know, overdue.
I went to Fremantle, Australia in 1987. They took a seedy little port town called Fremantle and put a lot of money in it, and Fremantle is a destination city to this day. In New Zealand, Auckland took a piece of its waterfront that was run down, threw money at it, built it up. It's a destination point in Auckland to this day. Valencia, Spain, same story.
So what makes San Francisco, the water of San Francisco, different, or the landscape of San Francisco different for a race like this than other places?
At a very practical level, our wind turns on almost every day at 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and it blows from the west. You can predict it. You can set up your courses. You can make plans. You can tell the television people when you're going to start a race and when you're going to end it. You go to someplace else where you don't have this sea breeze that blows every day. You wait for the wind to come up. Maybe the clouds come. Maybe they don't. The television people sit there and they say, this is not good.
Okay. Well, this is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7 KALW San Francisco and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're discussing San Francisco's decision to host the America's Cup. My guests are Josh Arce, the executive director of Brightline Defense, which helped develop the city's local hiring law, and he's been working on the America's Cup. Stephanie Lee, reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, who covers, among other things, the America's Cup. And Kimball Livingston, sailor, author, and blogger who has covered America's Cup for more than 30 years. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments and join our conversation at 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Before we go to any callers, we want to welcome Supervisor John Avalos, who is now joining us. Welcome, Supervisor.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Good evening.
Good evening. So unanimous vote.
Uh-huh.
Did that surprise you?
Not so much. I felt that the city had done a lot of hard work on the port side, the mayor's office, the board of supervisors, and our financial analysts to get a deal that we could support, that we had been that had been before us in numerous versions many times, and we finally felt like we had something that was workable.
Do you think that the Cup will benefit your district, which is District 11?
Not really. No, I mean, well, hopefully there'll be some of my members of my district who will get some jobs in the infrastructure development, and that will be great. But in terms of developing our own infrastructure, no, it's not. I think it has a jobs benefit, and I'm, you know, with our local hire ordinance, I see that as being important to my district residents. But we're seeing a lot of, you know, our general fund dollars are going to be going to putting on the event. That's general fund dollars that are not going to come to my district.
Okay.
And I know that's a fact. And hopefully we'll get some return on tourist dollars that will come back into our city's general fund. But that's a leap of faith as well.
Okay. The local hire is really your thing.
Yeah, well, it was something I worked on with Josh and lots of other folks in the community and a lot of labor organizations to assure that when we're using our tax dollars, our public dollars, to build our infrastructure, we're hiring local residents and we're having a local benefit for that construction.
So does this, I mean, is an event like this something that, how does this compare to generally what's going on in the city and your ability to implement
the
local hire?
The new deal that we have, mm-hmm. Definitely does provide a greater avenue for local hiring. In fact, the original plan that was going to have the event authority to oversee the development of Piers 30 and 32, that was not going to have a guarantee of local hire. But now that we have public dollars that are paying for that project first and foremost, we're going to see that there's going to be a direct local hire benefit for the development of those piers, although it's not going to be the kind of development that we were going to see long term that the event authority was going to do. It's more shoring up the piers, getting them ready for the event.
What's your biggest concern going into this?
I think overall, my biggest concern is like how much we are using our general fund dollars to pay for the event costs, how we're diverting a lot of our city resources to prepare for the America's Cup at the expense of neighborhoods and services around the city. And it's we're taking a leap of faith about whether we're going to see the tourists come here for the event. That's going to help our revenues here to help offset those expenditures that we're making of our general fund.
Okay. Let me have you hang on the line, sure, if you can. We have, and go to a caller. We have Daniel from San Francisco. Good evening, Daniel.
I'm here, yes.
Hi.
Hi. Look, I just wanted to kind of clarify something. You asked about revenue that would be generated by this important event. I don't think that's the right question to ask. I think the question should be what the tax revenue for the city will be, not what Hilton Hotel gets in profits and gets dispersed to its shareholders and management, but what gets left in the city. That is the important economic.
You know, that's a really good clarification, Daniel. And Avalos, maybe Supervisor Avalos, maybe you can take that one.
Oh, yeah, sure. And when I say revenue for our general fund. That's basically tax revenue coming in from the event. We know there's going to be a big boost to businesses and hotels and people who work with tourism in San Francisco, and that's what one of the benefits is. Well, the analysis is that it will bring in about $1 billion at least in new revenue. I don't know if that's the case or not. It's a leap of faith. And that will bring in some tax revenue that will be coming in as well as a result of all that business activity. But we're not sure if that's going to be the case or not.
Daniel, are you for or against it from what you understand?
Well, it's, you know, one is not for or against something that one doesn't completely understand.
Okay.
It helps us to understand if we know what the tax take is. But I do take very seriously the comments that your reporter that you have on the panel, the expert on the America's Cup, the capital investment in Fremantle and so on, and Auckland, that helps. We can justify that, and I'm in favor of it, if we can generate tax revenue for the city of San Francisco. But if it's a gift to the Hilton Hotel and the Hyatt Hotel and all of the other corporate entities in the city who will be taking profits out of the city and not leaving money in the city,
sure,
then we have an issue that we need to discuss further.
Sure.
I'm all in favor, in fact, of these kinds of investments,
okay,
as long as they generate tax revenue for the city.
Sure.
You know, I think overall we're going to see a lot of tourism come in, and that's going to be jobs, and it's not just these benefits that come to the major hotels. And I think that's one of the reasons why I supported it, because it was going to create some business activity that is kind of hurting in our economy. That's going to support a lot of local residents, and not just, you know, the most highest income people, or the most highly educated people who are getting jobs in our tech sector. I thought it was building out a greater part of our local economy. I support that aspect of it.
Let me we have a lot of people that want to ask questions. So let me go to Rick from the East Bay. Good evening, Rick.
Hello.
Hi, Rick. Welcome to City Visions.
Yes, thanks for having me. I got two comments. One on the issue. I'm by the way, I'm a longtime Bay Area, many years in San Francisco, and a follower at a very amateur level of America's Cup. And this is a huge, major event that San Francisco is very privileged to have show up and handed to them. And this is a city that used to have a reputation of knowing how, well, they've shown how to mess up a gift like this by layering on all kinds of demands, like what's in it for me type of things, instead of looking at the big picture of the benefit for the entire Bay Area and San Francisco and having an event like this and doing everything possible to make sure it's a good event rather than leaving uh-huh. bad taste in people's mouth. And one of these is a quick comment on the local hiring, which is a good thing to do and everybody should be doing it. But the benchmark should be, does the person doing the hiring, are they pleased and happy to be required to hire San Francisco workers? Are they?
That's a great question, Rick. I don't know if that, Supervisor, if that would be you or Josh that could answer that.
I think that the people who are building are happy to build, to quote Yeats. People who things all that rises falls, and those who build again are happy. And I'd like to see that people who are building want to do good work and see infrastructure that's developed that's going to be meaningful to people in San Francisco. And I think that they understand they're doing a great service for people by hiring local residents. And there's a real benefit to stabilizing communities around San Francisco and being a really good player in the business world here in the city.
Okay, and Josh, did you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I think Supervisor Avalos is right, and you're hearing from employers during this past year of the new law, employers saying, you know, we really are impressed with the quality of workers that are coming through the pipeline, working with the city's city build program, working with community-based organizations. I think a lot of folks have started on a construction career, and it's just been nothing but positive feedback from the employers that we hope will continue in years to come.
Okay. Let me go to another caller. We have John from San Francisco. Good evening, John.
Hi, good evening. My question is for Stephanie. Stephanie, it's John Gollinger with the Telegraph Hill Dwellers.
Hey, John, how are you?
Hi. And, you know, I was listening, and, you know, my question is about the change in this project. I mean, I think all of us who live here, I live in North Beach and on the Northeast waterfront where the America's Cup is going to be headquartered. We've all been really excited that the waterfront will be showcased by this project, but there was a lot of concern about giving away the piers for the rest of our lifetime. So my question, you know, Stephanie knows that our neighborhood group and some environmental groups were the ones who, right before Christmas, stood up and said, wait a second, before you rubber stamp and approve the project, we need to take a second look, and gave the Board of Supervisors and the mayor a chance to do some more dealing, which resulted in the plan we got. So my question is whether you think, sort of from your perspective, the project got better or worse because it got a chance to get further scrutiny?
Oh, that's an excellent question there, Stephanie.
Whether the project got better or worse, I mean, I think that when the America's Cup decided to be in San Francisco, there's an implicit understanding that it's that every single citizen is going to take a hard look at it and scrutinize, you know, every last detail of it. I don't know whether it's for better or worse that it changed, but it's definitely gone through all kinds of levels of scrutiny from groups like yours, just and from other citizens as well. So I think that, I mean, the process it's gone through is a real testament to how involved I think citizens in San Francisco are in what happens to you know, something that can be as obscure as long-term development deals on the waterfront.
Are you happy, John, with how things have evolved?
I think it vastly improved. I mean, I think as was said, I think early on, it changed from being both a sailing race and also this long-term development deal mixed in to actually being a sailing race. So, you know, I was really excited to hear from a sailing perspective, you know, the long history and the heritage of this race that now we get to celebrate in one of the most beautiful cities in the world, without worrying that, you know, a third of our historic waterfront is, for the rest of our lifetimes, going to potentially turn into giant high-rises or shopping malls, and we don't have to worry about that anymore. So that's a great thing.
If you're just tuning in, this is City Visions on local public radio 91.7 and on the web at kalw.org. Tonight we're discussing San Francisco's decision to host the America's Cup. My guests are Joseph Arce, Executive Director of Brightline Defense, which helps develop the city's local hiring law, Stephanie Lee, reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. She covers land use in San Francisco and the America's Cup, and Kimball Kimball Livingston, sailor, author, and blogger at blueplanettimes.com, who also has covered the America's Cup for 30 years. We also have joining us Supervisor John Avalos from District 11, who is joining us right now, too. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments. The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Or you can email us at feedback@cityvisionsradio.com. Let me go to William from Belvedere.
Yes, thank you very much. I have a somewhat different view. I'd urge that people consider this from a little take a step back. It seems to me that what we have here is the titans, the economic titans of the world, coming to throw us some crumbs. And in this case, the crumbs will be kind of large, and we'll all rush down to grab some of the crumbs. The unemployed will rush to get jobs, etc. But I noticed that the advocate, strongest advocate, described how strong the boats are and how fast they go. Well, who gives a darn? He didn't mention the price of these boats. Just to mention one thing, I live here in Belvedere, and there's a house on the market for $45 million. It's just been built on spec. And it's been announced that the executives of the American Cup are going to make that their headquarters. This is the big boys of the world. And I think one really has to recognize what this represents. The shame of it is that we live in a society where you can't, without this kind of titans, you can't keep your waterfront decent for all the people.
Oh, okay, good point. Do you want to take this, Kimball?
Well, I'm not sure there's anything much
to
take.
I mean,
do you
have a comment? Josh. Josh, do you?
I was going to say after.
Okay.
go ahead, yeah.
I really didn't have much response to that. The world is what it is, and we're fortunate to have an event coming here that will do a lot for the city. This has been said so many times. It's really unfortunate that a big event comes along, and no matter how transformative it might be, you can't hang the universal cause of social justice upon a sailboat race.
Okay.
Yeah, as someone who doesn't know the boats too much. I know more tonight than I did the past year. I think that there is something that, you know, I wanted to be involved. We said, well, let's give us a reason as just ordinary folks to get involved, to get excited about it, to try to get bought in to something a little bit more inclusive. We reached out, obviously, to the board, to Mayor Lee, and I think a lot of these folks, at our policymakers and the mayor, stepped up to, I think, hear this message that it has to be, there has to be something more in it for folks to get drawn in. And now it's not a development deal. They're not doing the high rises and all that stuff. And we have seen a lot of steps forward. There's all kinds of reason, I think, to see a need to follow through, particularly around this temporary construction. We talked about all these bleachers for 500,000 people and this tent village and all these things. It's a little bit soft, their commitment to do community and work with organized labor on this. And there's been some instances, Oracle World last summer in the past is a perfect example, where stuff got built the wrong way for really low wages, and that stuff that could have a real big backlash, I think, on the city. This is what we're talking about, our coalition right now. How do we follow through? Because this kind of capital accumulated doesn't want to see the kind of standards we want for workers. They may not want to have our workers out there to do some of this work, maybe because they come from communities of color or they're women, and they might not be the folks that they might be wanting to expect or to drive down wages. So I think there's reasons to be concerned, but with what's happened the past few weeks, I'm more excited. I'll be honest with you. More excited than I've been in the past. I've got a young family, a 5-month-old baby, my wife, two sisters-in-law that we all live together. We'll be there watching the boat races, making sure that we hold their feet to the fire, that all this stuff is followed through upon. But I think there's more for folks kind of that, like I say, don't know the boats to get more excited about the America's Cup regatta.
I want to go back to something, Stephanie, you brought up, which was the environmental impact. And you mentioned that, talked strictly about the water. But, you know, clearly there's a lot of wildlife around the shore too, and with all the construction, is there any, has there been any concern about what that's going to do to the, you know, to this beautiful coastline that San Francisco boasts of?
Yeah, absolutely. That was one of the concerns that the environmental groups brought up. Just some of the ones who questioned the environmental impact report were Sierra Club, the Golden Gate Audubon Society, and just a score of other environmental groups. One concession that was made in terms of hosting the city regards Chrissy Field. Initially, that was going to be a main spot for spectators to sit and watch the boats. But since, you know, in the process of the deal getting scaled down, Chrissy Field will no longer be an official spot. That's overseen by the National Park Service. So that was taken out of it. Now the city is negotiating with the service whether to pay up to $3 million for visitors who kind of go there anyway and you know, litter or whatnot to clean up after them.
Okay, okay. And Kimball?
I've seen the America's Cup Event Authority and everything around it being very aggressive about trying to take on environmental projects related to the Cup. We're sailors. We care about the water. And, well, I'm sitting here right now with a steel water bottle out of fear that you might offer me a plastic water bottle if I didn't bring my own. You didn't do that. Congratulations. But I remember an incident at the America's Cup World Series in San Diego last fall. The America's Cup didn't allow plastic water bottles or any form of plastic container to be sold at that event. But, you know, it's hard to think of everything. They forgot to tell their vendors why. So I saw people walking up to concessions and saying, I want to buy some water. And the people told, no, they won't let us sell you any water. Why not? Oh, we don't know.
Will be interesting to see how that evolves, you know, especially with such San Francisco, which is such an environmentally PC area.
Well, one of the things that's going on here is we're developing our values in San Francisco and taking them on the road with the America's Cup World Series.
Mm. Okay. Well, we first I want to thank Supervisor Avalos for being with us, and we want to welcome Supervisor Jane Kim, who is from District 6, who now joins us on the line. Good evening, Supervisor Kim.
Hi, good evening.
Thank you for calling in and joining our show.
No problem.
So now your district, Tenderloin, Soma, Civic Center, Downtown, Treasure Island, this group of people really might be impacted by the America's Cup. Would that be correct? So, and what's the general feel?
Most of our residents in South Beach, Rincon Hill area are very supportive of America's Cup, and they're excited that the teams are going to be based now up here at 3032. In the hopes that, of course, that a lot of the team members will interface with the neighborhood and, of course, shop in the local businesses.
Do you think there's a chance that real estate or might rise, or, you know, the it's going to change, like, the feeling for, you know, some place like, I guess, well, Soma's really changed already, but, you know, the Tenderloin. Will any of the money go back to that?
The previous deal that had been proposed to the Board of Supervisors included a potential real estate development. But the current deal that came to the board that was passed unanimously last week didn't include any real estate proposition. So what we voted on last week is just the event itself.
And were you happy with, I mean, obviously where you supported it, but what in your, from your position really made you confident to vote yes?
Coming to San Francisco, I think it remains to be seen what type of revenue this event will generate for the city and county, because it's not a tested event. And, you know, I think we're uncertain as to how popular, you know, the event will be. But I think we'll definitely be generating some revenue from this event. And I think that we just have to be careful and make sure that the expenditures that we spend on supporting in the event matches the revenue that we gain.
And you know, it's interesting to hear both you and Supervisor Avalos talk, because it sounds like you're not that confident that it's gonna. It sounds like there's a lot of you know, hoping, but no confidence it's really gonna happen.
Yeah.
What's a worst case scenario as far as you're concerned?
Well, you know, I think we were hoping that more teams would sign up for the race, and currently we have roughly 3 to 4 Michigan. And I'm sort of saying, and I'm happy to support the event. I think it's a good trail run for the city, and of course, it's going to bring a lot of attention to our waterfront.
Uh huh. Oh, we're losing you, Supervisor Kim. I don't know if you can call us back. It's always the danger of calling from a cell phone, although we very much appreciate your calling in. Okay, we can hear you now.
Oh, you can hear me now? Great.
Yeah. Okay.
What I was saying is that I think this event is going to bring a lot of attention to our...
Oh. It's like Mad Libs. Okay, I'm going to suggest that you call back Supervisor Kim because we lost you again. But that's really interesting. I thought that I think it's really interesting that there was unanimous vote, even though there isn't unanimous a feeling of 100%. This is going to work, and this is going to work the way we expect it to. Stephanie, what do you think about that?
Well, I think the major concern going forward is about the money.
Of course.
There's a fundraising group called the Organizing Committee, which is headed by Mark Buell, who's a big Democratic fundraiser in the city, also heads the Rec and Park Commission. So that team of fundraisers is tasked with raising $32 million over 3 years. Their first benchmark was $12 million, and at the end of, or the beginning of this year, they said that they've raised about, I think, $12.5 million. After an audit was done of the money they'd raised, it was found that they'd raised between $800,000 and $900,000 in cash. The rest of it was pledges from donors who didn't give to them the cash but said, we will give this to you when the time comes, to spend it on city expenses to put on the event, such as more muni buses, extra security, cleanup, et cetera. So there's still concern, I think, among supervisors that, they've only, quote, only got $800,000 in cash. Can they really, and especially in an economy that's not super great, can they still raise what's needed to meet that $32 million benchmark at the end of 3 years?
Okay. Well, let me take another caller. We have Philip from Brisbane. Welcome, Philip.
Hi, thank you so much. I was just wondering, unless you have your own private condo overlooking the bay, if you're an ordinary person and you wanted to see this event, where would be the best place to actually view it? I mean, trying to watch sailboat races from at the waterfront edge, where you're actually at sea level, it's not an easy way to see anybody sailing or racing. Mark Twain had something to say about that. Where would Kimball Livingston want to see it?
Yeah, Kimball, besides being in the water, what would you recommend?
It's going to be very easy. The America's Cup does not sell tickets, so you don't have to think in advance. You just show up on the San Francisco City front. The action starts this August, and there will be a second event on San Francisco Bay in October. Those 45-foot one designs that I talked about earlier will be here in August and again in October.
Is there a specific place, though, that you will
Chrissy
be better?
Field, Chrissy Field, the Marina Field? Green, it's all there. The events this year will all be in a very confined area between the Golden Gate Bridge and about Pier 39.
Okay. So you could even be on Pier 39 and see a really exciting finish.
You could. And when we get to 2013 with the bigger boats, they're going to be in the same area, but they'll be finishing down near Piers 27, 29. So the whole San Francisco waterfront is going to be the place to see.
Okay, let me go to Bob, take one more call. Bob from Palo Alto, good evening.
Yeah, hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm curious to know whether there's a feeling that the San Francisco Bay and its adjacent waters are the best possible waters for this type of yachting. I'm thinking of particularly in Australia, where the waves and the wind there are very special. I'm just wondering if this is the best venue. And my interest in that question relates to whether this particular race serves as a catalyst, as it has some races in the past, for innovation of sales, of electronics, and so on and so forth.
That's a really interesting question, Bob. What about that? Kimball's, I would ask you in terms of, is there a lot of innovation that takes place due to races like this?
These boats are the most innovative that have raced in the America's Cup in generations. the last generation of America's Cup boats had innovation maybe in the equipment or the sail design just a little bit. Maybe a new generation of sail cloth was used. But really, we talked about trickle-down from the America's Cup to the rest of the sport. This jumps to an entirely different level. These wing-sailed boats, as I said before, they're 40% more powerful per square foot of area than an ordinary sail. That's huge just in itself. The boats are kit form. They're 45 feet long, but they come apart to fit into a 30-foot container so they can travel. When they start building the wings for the 72s, they go into a world of hydraulics and complexity that is absolutely whiz-bang.
And so being in San Francisco, are those the 72 feet, is that specifically for the San Francisco Bay, or is that just the natural change and
it's more or less the size that boats have been in previous generations of America's Cup, and the assumption was that you needed to go to that size to have the sort of grandeur and majesty that's associated with this kind of racing. Frankly, I think they're at this point beginning to be a little bit afraid of what they're giving birth to. It's so hard to sail the 45s, and people get hurt on them, that they're beginning to think we may have overachieved with the 72s.
Interesting.
But they're going to have to race them in 2013 before they can rethink.
Okay. Well, we're getting to the top of the hour, so I want to let each of you to have some kind of a final word on your take on the race going forward from your perspective. So why don't we start with you, Josh?
I think that San Francisco, like all cities, California, certainly probably across this country, want to attract events like America's Cup and want to attract big, high-profile type of events. They want to attract things that generate benefits for the local economy. I think for the work that we do, it's important to remember that those local benefits don't just happen on their own. You can't just expect that you're going to deliver for your most in-need communities the economic benefits that are promised. And so I think America's Cup is a lesson about how you really must work to put teeth into some of these promises to make this event as good as it's going to be and as exciting as it's going to be for lots and lots of folks, or better yet, work to develop a policy you can apply to all these kind of things like the local hiring policy we have in San Francisco. But now I think going forward, we've got something that's a little bit more likely to raise all boats. Sorry about the pun.
Okay. And Stephanie?
It's been really interesting to watch this. This is the planning for the event evolve over the last several months. I think the thing to look for going forward is just will the excitement and the attention and the crowds that are projected to come, will they come, and how much money will they spend? That's the big question for the city and for the America's Cup itself. I guess we can only wait and see come this summer and next summer. But it'll be interesting to see whether the city can successfully sell an event that is about sailing, that not a lot of Americans are very familiar with. Uh-huh. Has been billed as third only to the World Cup in the Olympics, but we'll have to see if the crowds come anyway.
Thank you. And Kimball Livingston.
The crowds have come everywhere else the America's Cup has been. And let's remember, the West wasn't built by cowboys. The West was built by sailors who brought those ships in. They brought in school marms and the mail and lumber and nails and shovels, and they built this city from the sea. It's time for us to put our eyes back to it.
Very, very nice ending to our show. So that's City Visions for this evening. Our guests tonight were Josh Arce, the executive director of Brightline Defense, which helps develop the city's local hiring law, Stephanie Lee, reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, who covers land use and America's Cup, and Kimball Livingston, sailor, author, and blogger, who has covered the America's Cup for more than 30 years. I want to thank you all for joining me this evening.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
And I also want to give special thanks to supervisors Jane Kim and John Avalos for joining us and being a part of this show. For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, check out our website. You can go to kalw.org and look up City Visions, and you will be able to do all that. Our engineer for this evening was Eric Jansen. Thank you so much, Eric. And City Visions, tonight's show was produced by Lisa Denenmark. Thank you so much, Lisa. Fantastic show. City Visions senior producer is Susie Britton, and Neil Fries manages our website. City Visions is preempted next week, but join my co-host Joseph Pache on April 16th when we will discuss urban farming. This is Lauren Meltzer. Thank you for listening. Good night and have a great week.